Welcome to Sport Flight Magazine. Please bring all seats to an upright position. Seatbelts should be fastened at all times due to possible air turbulence. As Sport Flight previews and reviews the good, the bad, and the ugly world of sports, Sport Flight's humor, entertainment, and candor will propel you to speeds of 600 miles per hour and reach altitudes of 30,000 feet. Now, sit back, relax, and experience a different sports perspective.
Edition of Sport Flight FYI, sponsored by UrbanCollegeSports.com. That's the BKS in Black Sports Information. UrbanCollegeSports.com for your Black College scores, rankings, and much, much more. I am your co-host, James Hill, along with Sean Bush. Among the topics that we will discuss today, of course, at the very top, the World Series winner. For the second consecutive year, the World Series winner sweeps the opposition as the Chicago White Sox defeat the Houston Astros 1-0 in Game 4 and take the 2005 title. We'll also talk about Major League Baseball and some of the changes that we discussed last week, managerial changes. One manager in particular returns to his old team. We'll talk about the NFL, week number 6. And week number 7, specifically week number 6 when LaDainian Tomlinson broke or tied the record of Lenny Moore with 18 touchdowns. Week number 7 wasn't quite so good for LaDainian and the Chargers. We'll also talk about the NFL upcoming week, week number 8. We'll also discuss the fact that an NFL icon just passed, as well as another icon in the overall community passing. We'll talk about Major League Baseball. When is it determined that the home field advantage must be commissioned by the baseball commissioner? You know what I'm referring to. I'm referring to the dome, whether it should be open or closed. And, yeah, Mr. Magoo, Bud Selig, strikes again. That's a topic that we will also discuss. This and much, much more, as well as Black college sport, the aficionado question of the week, and our player profile, our Black player profile for this week. Sean, as we discussed earlier, or mentioned earlier, the fact about the World Series winners, the Chicago White Sox, and I believe each of us had stated earlier that we expected the White Sox to win because of their pitching and also because of their hitting. It appears as though through the series, though, the White Sox outpitched, outhit, and out-hustle the Astros to keep the title in the American League.
Well, absolutely. But one of the other things that I definitely did mention was that Houston's amnesia of getting runs on the board. And
that's been a problem for them the entire year.
That's been the problem for them the entire year. And what saved them was their pitching, because they was able to dominate. They were able to bring Royce Oswalt in, have Clemens, have Petting. So they was able to win by basically out-pitching everybody. So when your pitching is gone because you have a team who's a better hitting team, then you're in some big trouble. And that's basically what happened. And Game 4 just really showed that, where they couldn't get no offense going whatsoever. It was non-existent. And the seventh inning, Chicago played, and basically they went back and played what they've been doing best, and that's been playing the small ball. And that was the way they was able to get that run, which is, that one run was pretty much gold mine for them. And with the pitching, the way that pitching was playing, was going, it was absolutely phenomenal. And a lot of people, and I was one of them included, when coming into the World Series, well, was worried about the bullpen, because they had, they didn't have little. They didn't have really no work against the Angels.
The White Sox?
The White Sox, yes. They didn't have no bullpen work in those five games against the Angels. So to see how the bullpen responded time after time again, you look at game three, you look at all the with all the relief pitchers, what they did from pretty much the eighth inning on and was able to hold the Houston Astros the way they did was absolutely phenomenal and showed and proved why they deserved and why they were the best team in Major League Baseball.
Well, you know, a little known fact that we often like to bring up here on Sports Flight is that with the Chicago White Sox winning their first World Series since 1917, which everyone's aware of now,
exactly,
it also signals the first World Series where a management team to reach this particular pinnacle have been predominantly people of color. Because Major League Baseball, like the NFL, covertly subscribes to the Old Boy Network.
True, true.
And as a result of that, Ozzie Guillen is not the first person of color to win a World Series. That goes to Felipe Alou with the Toronto
Blue Jays.
Yeah, with the Toronto Blue Jays. It is the first time that the general manager and the majority of the coaching staff, with the general manager being Ken Williams, winning the World Series. And Ozzie Guillen's coaching staff has Harold Baines, which most people remember, Joey Cora, and Tim Raines.
Yeah, all teammates of his in the early 80s, I'm sorry, late 80s, early 90s. So that, you know, heck, the coaches could have beat up on some of the players.
Point out the fact, college ball and as in the NFL, the fact that we do not have enough people of color in management. I mean, with regards to Major League Baseball, you're looking at five of the 30 teams, so you're looking at 16.7% have black managers.
Yep.
You got the Mets with Willie Randolph, the Cubs with Baker, Dusty Baker, the Giants with Felipe Alou, mentioned earlier, and, of course, the Nationals with Frank Robinson.
Exactly.
That's only, and that's four out of the five you'll notice are in the National League. And if you remember correctly, the National League has always been more aggressive, dating back to the Jackie Robinson, Roy Campanella days for opening doors for blacks. Unfortunately, that's not going to change until it changes at the ownership level. And
well,
we have
yeah.
A person of color at the ownership level now, and that's with the Angels, and the owner is Hispanic. So there are possibilities there. And that's the only way that it's going to change, because most of the time, people hire those people that they feel most comfortable around or through recommendations by other people.
Well, yeah. And one of the things is you noticed is as far as trends, as far as general managers, begin to like younger. And, I mean, ridiculously younger.
And from Ivy League schools.
Yeah.
That seems to be the trend now. And for whatever reason, you know, there are baseball people who have cut their teeth in baseball who would be just as good given the opportunities as some of these young guys. And you notice they're getting younger and younger. The young man, Daniels, that took over for John Hart in Texas.
Yeah, he's 28.
28 years of age.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. They're getting ridiculously younger.
Well, you know, most professional leagues are copycats. And they will copy what others have done. And the fact that the Boston Red Sox went to the World Series and won the World Series last year with Theo Epstein as their general manager,
right?
Then obviously the others are going to do that.
Absolutely.
And of course, with Tom Hicks in Texas, they wasn't surprised with Tom Hicks.
So Jordan and the round mound of rebound on Oprah yesterday?
No, I actually missed that.
Yeah.
That was probably a very interesting conversation. I haven't checked out the as far as the 60 Minutes conversation. What does pain me to find all this out about Michael is that he's doing this to promote a book and not doing it any time else.
Well, you should have heard Charles, and you know he and Charles are good friends. And the show really became lively when Charles came on.
Oh, of course
everyone
it did.
Knows that Charles speaks his mind. And Charles did crack on Michael. He stated, I believe Oprah's question was, what is the difference between the two of you, or something to that effect. And he said that he wasn't Charles stated that he was not concerned about what people thought about him. He said, 50% of the people are going to like you, 50% are going to hate you. So he says, I always speak my mind.
Oh, absolutely. And Charles has always been like that. I have not heard Charles pull back on something. Now he probably said something, and then thinking about it, wish he didn't, and then he was the first one. He was always man enough to apologize and own up to his mistakes. That's one of the things that I really did admire about Charles, and was a great fortune to get to know him. He remembered me by my first name and actually called me by my first name. And the stuff like that that I do remember about my parents. But always had a good time as far as talking to him. And also, just because he knows you, that could be a good thing because he gives you respect. But it also could be a bad thing because he will talk about you too. Just because we friends don't mean I don't need to talk about you. And these social life experiences, I've used myself to this day.
And he does boom it out.
Yeah, he lets it be known. You know, you look at him sometimes on TNT, and which I've always said and continue to say is the best as far as coverage, as far as NBA. TNT has the best trio of announcers by far. ESPN is coming to, as far as a close second. But, you know, sometimes he says things a little weird, a little off, a little crazy. But guess what? John Madden does it too. John Madden been on the air for 55 years. So, but Charles Barkley knows basketball, and he knows it very well, and he talks about it and brings up all. He always brings up some good points. You might not agree with him, but he does bring up some good points because he knows the game of basketball.
Yeah, he mentioned also yesterday that he would have won some championships also if he had Scottie Pippen and Rodman.
And Horace Grant and Tony Kukoc and Ron
Pippen,
Harper.
Pippen and Rodman were the only two that he mentioned.
Well, because those ones stand out. But, of course, you look at those Philadelphia 76ers teams that he was on, and it was like they should be winning it, but they always missed that one key person. They always had two. They just missed that X factor. And for the Bulls, X factor was Pippen, who was the two as well. But he missed that X factor, and that's why he always came up short. The best chance he really had was with the Suns, and you know the Bulls just went ahead and just overpowered them in four. But he could have did a Karl Malone and go on the team, take less money, and be really loaded. But you know Karl did that. And he still didn't win his championship.
Yeah, well, there are no guarantees in life. And speaking of Oprah, come to think of it, for the past week she's had professional athletes on. I don't know if you were privy to her show last week, which was more on the serious side with Lavernius Coles, the wide receiver with the New York Jets.
Okay.
Formerly with the Redskins.
Okay.
He was on the show and finally came out. I think he had come out earlier with the New York Times article stating that he was molested as a child by his stepfather. His mother was in the audience. It was a very gripping story, and it was unusual that, as you are aware, for a professional athlete to come out and make mention of that. And really there was no discussion, nor did I see any other articles other than the New York Times article about that.
Well, speaking of as far as discussions and in their next issue of ESPN Magazine, and that is Cheryl Swoops confessing or saying openly that she is gay. So, and she is basically the first athlete who is still currently playing that admitted that she is gay as far as the topic of gays in sports as well. And
yeah, I think it will spark that conversation, but I think the conversation will go back to trying to determine or speculate as to the percentage of male players in professional sports that perhaps are in the locker room and are gay.
Exactly, because the wild rumor and speculations in sports anyway is they're all gay anyway. So I think for the simple reason that you have a player, and let's call it like it is, Cheryl Swoops is the most recognizable player who's announced she is gay, playing or not. She is the most recognizable player. She is the reigning WNBA MVP, and she is not going to be retiring anytime soon. So You know, like you said,
more recognizable than Leslie.
Leslie did not say she's gay.
No, I thought you said that she, that Cheryl Swoops was the most recognizable.
Well, as far as them, well, she's recognizable. They're on the same tier. Leslie, Swoops, Staley. They're more recognizable for their, because playing globally, playing international ball, playing the Olympics, playing WNBA. Remember, those, you look at three players in particular. It was Swoops, Leslie, and Rebecca Lobo who were the initial people to bring as far as...
Lobo now? Isn't she announcing some of the Liberty Games or something?
She is announcing...
She's retired.
Yes, she's announcing a Liberty Games. She announced ESPN for women's basketball and then the WNBA coverage on ESPN. So, yeah,
she was a goofy-looking player.
She was goofy because she was 6'10", James. You don't see that, man. You don't see women who's 6'10". You want to see quote unquote goofy.
If that's the way you want to put it, I'll let you slide.
Okay, if you want to go ahead and see.
That wasn't why I said she looked goofy.
If you want to see quote unquote goofy, look at the Connecticut Sun player who's 7'2" and don't dunk. It's going to be very interesting to see what the WNBA, how they respond to this. How will the Houston Comets actually respond to this? Because it's going to be a main story once the WNBA season comes around. So that's something we're going to look into. We're going to see in the next couple of months how this comes about.
You know how we have discussed in the past that the term fan is a derivative of fanatics?
Yes.
Well, I have a story today, which occurred, I believe, last week. It really falls into the theater of the absurd, where a convict, and you may have heard this story, where a convict who was sentenced to 30 years, Eric James Torpey,
yes,
was sentenced to 30 years. But instead of taking 30 years,
yes,
he said he wanted 33. That's what he told the judge. And you know why he wanted 33 years?
Go ahead and tell me.
Because that's the jersey number of Larry Bird. Eric said, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down in Larry Bird's jersey. So he requested 33 years. Is he a fool or what?
See, right then and there, the defense should have been jumping up and down. Do you know why? Do you know why?
No, why should they have been jumping up
and down? They should have been jumping up and down for the simple reason they had an insanity plea. Because this guy is obviously crazy.
I believe that.
I actually read that story and looked at it twice. Because it was late. It was late for me. You know, I'm tired of sleep. I looked at that and I was like, what?
You were saying you couldn't believe what you read.
I rubbed my eyes so hard, I almost gave myself a black eye. I was like, this fool asked for 3 more years? Wow.
And also bordering on the theater of the absurd, did you watch that Monday Night Football game with Vinny and the Jets?
Yes, and we saw how old parts really...
Well, old man time has punched Vinny's clock. Ding dong, the Jets are dead.
Well, you know, you knew they was in trouble when Chad Pennington was not putting a lot of zip on the ball during the preseason, during the first couple of weeks. You knew something was wrong. And then to find out he did, you know, tear his shoulder. And then you won't play your backup who's been there the whole entire season. And you had to pretty much, it seemed to me, they pretty much begged Vinny to come back, to bring Vinny Testaverde back. You knew right then and there the season was pretty much lost.
Oh, yeah.
And then you look at, you go on the flip side, Michael Vick, who I say is the most electrifying player in the NFL.
And emphasize player, not quarterback, but player.
Player.
Right.
And that's what I was about to come up to. 9 for 26. 106 yards, 0 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, scored 2 touchdown rushing,
yeah,
had the 4th worst quarterback rating for QB to win on Monday Night Football, and they destroyed them. It's destroyed the Jets.
Well, I always say the bottom line is he a winner? And
I believe
why I think
so.
That Tom Brady is the best quarterback in the NFL because Brady is a winner. Now, the stats king is
Peyton Manning. That without a doubt.
But as far as winning football, it has to be Tom Brady.
And then you know what? And here's the thing. You know who I'm ranking second? Who would you rank second as that, as far as winning quarterbacks?
Currently?
Yes. We're not going to go ever. We're just going to go currently in the NFL. Who would you rank?
Roethlisberger.
Roethlisberger is my number two because he has proven he can beat.
I mean, he went 15-1 last year.
He can beat anybody except New England.
Yeah. And basically, he's the maintenance man. Because Roethlisberger, if he throws 15 passes in a game, that's a lot. He normally throws anywhere from 10 to 12 passes per game. They just want him to make certain that he doesn't turn the ball over.
And see, here's the thing: why I give Vic, put him in that category with Brady and Roethlisberger, just because he throws absolutely terrible and horrible. The main difference between Vic and Roethlisberger is Vic don't have no wide receivers, no good wide receivers. His best wide receiver is his tight end. Okay, with Crumpler. With Pittsburgh, you got Hines Ward. Okay, so they need to get some wide receiver help for him. But the reason he can go ahead and change the game is because he can go ahead and hand the ball off to the most underrated running back in the league, and that is Lord Dunn, and give it to Duckett. But then also, actually, the defense are so worried about Vic running the ball, they can care less about what he does passing the ball. Because once he starts scrambling, they'll worry about what he's going to do. And that's how he can go. That's how he changes the game.
And he has the arm strength to pass the ball deep. I don't know if he has the touch with
he can throw
short passes.
He can throw a 50-yard bomb with both hands. We've seen him do it.
Mm-hmm.
He can do it. He has the ability to do it. A lot of people saying he needs to stop running because a lot of people want to compare him to Steve Young. Because when Steve Young first got into the league, he ran a lot. Well, there's a difference between him and Steve Young. Steve Young played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he had to run because he didn't have no offensive line. If he didn't run, Steve Young would not be a Hall of Famer because Steve Young will be dead.
He was running for his life.
He was running for his life.
When he went to San Francisco, he had to sit behind what some people consider the best quarterback in the NFL, period, and Joe Montana. Then when he got his turn, Steve Young had the weapons with Taylor and with Rice.
With Taylor, Rice, Ricky Waters.
Waters, the running back.
Whoever the tight end at the time. Because trust me, you was a tight end in San Francisco, you were good. And he had the offensive line. Vic doesn't have all those weapons. He has the running back. He has the tight end. He has a very solid offensive line. He just don't have the wide receivers to throw it to. So I think they're going to have to go ahead and do something like what the 49ers did in the early 80s. A lot more short passes for him and use the short passing game as an extension of the running game.
Well,
but instead, all they're doing is going for slants, they're going for bombs, and they're going for the big plays, and that's not working.
Well, as we're talking about players that are not getting their due and players who should have more notoriety, so to speak, as far as what they do for their teams and winning. One player, a running back, who really does not get his due whatsoever, and perhaps it's because he's out west playing or the northwest, and that's Sean Alexander. You hear about LaDainian Tomlinson, and he is great. I'm not taking that away from him. You hear about Priest Holmes. Prior to the season, you would hear about Ricky Williams and Jamal Lewis and Curtis Martin and players of that ilk, Edgerrin James and so forth. Seldom do you hear about Sean Alexander. And Sean Alexander has been in the league since 2000. And since 2001, he has ranked in the top three in touchdowns each and every year. And he leads in touchdowns this year with 12.
Yes, and you look at him, he is in exclusive categories because of those 12 touchdowns. He has had four straight seasons with 10 or more rushing touchdowns.
He and LaDainian Tomlinson are the only players in the history of the NFL to do it for, I believe it's five consecutive seasons.
No, I think Tomlinson is four.
Five consecutive seasons.
It is five consecutive seasons, so both of them did five consecutive.
Alexander and Tomlinson.
Oh, I'm sorry. That when I found out about that stat, Tomlinson only had, he still was under in single digits. He obviously exceeded that over the past couple of weeks. And then you look at those two, they beat out one particular person who I've heard was a good running back, and that was Walter Payton. Walter Payton only did it four straight seasons. So that tells you the class both of those two players are.
Oh, absolutely. And Alexander missed the rushing title by 1 yard last year.
And he was not too happy about that. And I thought that was going to be the reason why he was going to leave Seattle.
Well, I think that he may be leaving Seattle after this season because he did sign a 1 year contract worth $6 million. But in that contract, there is wording in there that they cannot use him or put him in as their franchise player. So they're either going to have to sign him long term or he will become a free agent.
Well, if Seattle doesn't make the playoffs, there's going to be a whole bunch of people going to be leaving Seattle.
Including the head coach.
And that's going to be and the first person will be the head coach. The first person will be out the door as the head coach, and then the floodgates will open.
This past week, which was week 7 in the NFL, any surprises for you?
Well, I think one of the biggest surprises is such how the close games and how the people pull out those victories. You look at Manning, who is pretty much
referring to Eli
Manning. You're absolutely right. As far as how he has grown as a quarterback, let's be honest. Last year he looked completely lost, probably because he was getting knocked upside the head more times than he used to when he was little in the Manning household. This year he is calm, he is cool, he is collective. He is going ahead and making some tough throws for setting up. Drives or continuing drives or setting up for game-winning field goals. He did in back-to-back games two weeks ago against the Cowboys, and this week that drive that he had against the Broncos was absolutely great. You look at the Philadelphia Eagles, they have truly forgot how to run the ball.
I don't know that they have a running game. Westbrook is more of a weapon in the throwing game as opposed to running. Westbrook never impressed me as a runner.
But you know what? I think there's some underlying stuff going on with that because he was like a Roger Craig. He was a more advanced Roger Craig. He can go ahead and run the ball, and he can also catch the ball out in the backfield. And
but Westbrook was never impressive running the ball.
That's perfectly fine. And he never got 1,000-yard rushing, but he was able to get around 1,200, 1,300 of total yards. And because they gave him to go ahead and run the ball, but also use him as far as a wide receiver out the backfield. But it seems like now they're only using him strictly as going out of the backfield trying to catch the ball. And I believe that has something to do with this whole contract situation. He wants to prove that he deserves the money, but they're not giving him the carries to go ahead and prove his worth. Because the biggest sticking point is, well, you haven't had a 1,000-yard season as far as rushing. You're not able to carry the big loads to go ahead and ask for the running back money that you're trying to ask for because you don't have the numbers to prove it.
Right.
Now, it seems to me they said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and show you that I can go ahead and do this. But now he's not getting opportunities to run the ball because Westbrook's reason is, well, all you got to do is just do my total all-purpose yards, and you can see I am a 1,000-yard or 1,200-yard type player. It's just not rushing. It's a combination of both. Well, now you don't give him the running plays and the running opportunities. Guess what happens to his combined yardage? It goes down even further. Now all you're doing is catching the ball and getting those yards that way. So it seems to me it looks like a backdoor way of undercutting him. Yes, they're still winning, but it's a backdoor way of not paying him the top dollars he's looking for as far as a running back, because, yes, he is still a running back. That's a way for him to undercut that offer and say, okay, now you're going to have to bring it down, and here's the price point where we think you're worth at. Any way it goes, you know, don't look to see Westbrook in Philadelphia after this year.
You don't think so?
Oh, absolutely not. Because if these are the games they're going to play with him, he's going to go ahead and leave.
I tell you, the game that surprised me out of all of them was Oakland beating up on Buffalo, 38-17.
And the way they beat them up.
Yeah, I mean, without Randy Moss.
Well, Randy Moss did play.
But, I mean, he wasn't contributing.
He wasn't Randy Moss.
Right.
You know, the game that really surprised me was Minnesota, how they was able to come back and pull.
Oh, that was a miracle finish.
Pull victory out of the jaws of defeat.
Minnesota was a miracle finish, and Philadelphia was a miracle finish.
Oh, absolutely. Philadelphia had no right to win.
Seattle was a miracle finish as well.
Well, Seattle was more Dallas just totally just...
They disintegrated.
...screwing up. And a person lost their job because of it, and Cortez, the kicker.
Right.
One week you're a hero, next week you're out of a job. And that's what happened. He kicked the game winner against the Giants the following week.
When you want to run with the big dogs, you know what I always say.
Well, but here's the thing.
Just like a puppy.
But here's the thing. As soon as he got cut, the very next day he got a job.
Hey, they need kickers.
You need kickers.
Yeah.
Maybe
kickers will go from team to team. It's just like closers in Major League Baseball.
Well,
one team will cut a closer, and he will be gone, especially if you're a southpaw, especially if you're throwing from the left-hand side.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, one thing, here's people in sports, you look over, in all the sports, that's never going to worry about losing the job. A left-handed pitcher.
Correct.
A kicker in football.
Correct.
And a 7-foot center in basketball. They're never going to lose a job.
Yeah, there are quite a few of them
in the
NBA today.
And look who they're trying. Look who Bill Parcells is trying to dust off the scrap heap to come be his kicker. 93-year-old Martin Anderson.
Well, Bill thinks that he has special powers, that he can do those things. Let's move on to the this week's Black College scores from Saturday. Division 1 AA, Black College scores. Alabama A&M defeats Arkansas Pine Bluff 28-13. Alcorn State handles Southern 38-16. Delaware State 41, Morgan State 14. Florida A&M easily dispenses Norfolk State 31-17. Grambling State beats up on Jackson State 52-21. Hampton skates by South Carolina State 14-10. Howard University beats up on North Carolina A&T 16-6. Jacksonville State 33, Tennessee State 3. Mississippi Valley State 35, Texas Southern 28. And finally, Prairie View dispenses Lincoln 48. Those are your Black College scores. For additional scores, conference rankings, conference information, make certain that you click on to urbancollegesports.com. That's urbancollegesports.com. This week's Bronze Pioneer. Today, 68% of players in the National Football League are black. However, many fans are not aware of the sacrifice and, yes, even the struggle of early pioneers such as Charles Follis, Fritz Pollard, Kenny Washington, Marion Motley, and Bobby Mitchell, among others. In many years, or many ways, sports set the tone for America to begin their integration off the field. The NFL was the first major sport to lower its color barrier during the post-war period, though not without a struggle. Bronze Pioneers profiles these early paragons who, in small numbers, participated in professional football between the years of 1904 and 1933, at which time the color barrier was created by the NFL league owners, followed by a reintegration in 1946. Finally, public pressure generated by the black press and the creation of rival leagues visibly changed professional football for these bronze pioneers. Sportflight's bronze pioneer, in recognition of these black paragons of football nobility, this week we honor Emil Tunnell. The New York Giants professional football franchise was purchased for a reported $500 in 1925. It wasn't until 1948 that the Giants signed their first black player, Emil Tunnell, a defensive back out of Iowa. He was originally ignored in the 1948 NFL draft. Tunnell walked into the Giants' office and asked owner Tim Mara for a tryout. Mara signed Tunnell as a free agent. The Giants never regretted the decision, as Tunnell patrolled the Giants' defensive backfield for 11 seasons. In 1952, Tunnell gained more yards, 923, on interceptions and kickoff returns than the leading NFL rusher for that season. Tunnell holds the Giants' team record with 74 interceptions, which, by the way, is second in the NFL, and the Giants' record with 257 punt returns. Tunnell played in 9 Pro Bowls and was named All-NFL 4 times. Tunnell earned the nickname Offense on Defense. Tunnell ended his career with the Packers between 1959 and 1961. Emil Tunnell was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1967. Emil Tunnell died in 1975. Emil Tunnell and other black paragons paved the road for today's black players. This has been a Sport Flight FYI. Speaking of the New York Giants, I had mentioned in the opening credits that one of the icons in the sports arena had passed away, and that particular icon that I was referring to was the former owner of the New York Giants, Wellington Mara.
Absolutely.
He died at the age of 89. He became a part-time owner 75 years ago at the age of 14. Well, that's because his father owned it.
Exactly. That helps.
But, you know, like most astute, powerful men, Mara kept his kept a low profile publicly.
Yes, he did. He absolutely, you really didn't hear a whole bunch of offers. He let the people to run the football team run the football team. And he did that very well. He did, you know, they said he was one of the few people to actually see majority of his team's games. Except when he went and served in the military for World War II. Mm-hmm. So he was there, and he came and he did not believe. He did not even want. He got inducted into the Hall of Fame, and did not want to accept the award because he believed that the Hall of Fame was meant for the players,
exactly,
not for him, right, and not for people who have not played the game, so to speak.
Also, this week, as is the case every week, we profile a former pioneer in the world of sports. I'd like to not profile but honor someone who died this week, who was also a pioneer, not in the sports arena, but in the human race arena for America. Civil rights icon Rosa Parks died this week. She was a true pioneer. She changed America December 1955 with her quiet strength. She died at the age of 92 of natural causes. She was also an icon. She lived to see the fruits of her endeavors as well.
Absolutely.
She was 42. I didn't realize she was that old in 1955. She was 42 when she refused to give up her seat on that bus.
Absolutely.
And she died at the age of 92.
And she did live a great life, regardless of you look at what she did, and she did not, that wasn't her plan to do what she did. But to have the strength and have to keep your convictions throughout probably one of our worstest times, able to do that was absolutely great. She is the mother of the civil rights movement, without a doubt. And her passing will be missed. And it's good, and hopefully we are going to remember her very well. And not only the people who've lived it and the people who learned as far as it, but most importantly, our younger generation. I think it's going to be very important they understand what the rights that they have now really started with Rosa Parks. So we
have to... Well, it's going to be up to people such as yourself to carry that message and to educate the young people, to let them know that, because without you doing it or without others doing it, it will be lost. All right, our Sport Flight aficionado question for this week. There have been four Division I-A college coaches to go undefeated in five regular seasons. Name them. There have been four Division I-A college football coaches to go undefeated in five regular seasons. Name them. And, Sean, since you are a sports aficionado, I know you know the answer.
No. You're doing this. I see what you're doing. You're doing this to have me openly say I do not know this and that you're a better man. That's cold, man. That's cold.
Actually, you could say you know it because you know you're not going to give the answer over the phone.
But still, so. That's still cold. That just shows me what type of person you are.
Let's wrap it up with taking a look at how we did last week in our NFL predictions. And
how bad did I beat you?
How bad did you beat me?
Yeah.
I'm glad you asked that question.
Oh,
how
great.
How bad did he beat me?
Great. You know, he...
Well, in actuality, I beat you.
See,
2-0. You had none correct last week.
See, folks, you need to understand, when he gets all uppity-uppy, puffs his chest out like that, I know I'm in the wrong. I know I'm about to catch one. But when he's wrong on this, he gets real low. He gets real quiet. He speaks honorably. You ain't slick.
Each week, for those who are unaware what we are doing and what we do on a weekly basis here on Sport Flight FYI, is we take five games and we determine who will be the winners of those five games. And thus far, Sean has had the best of me this season. This past week, Sean had 0 and I had 2. So neither of us did that well last week. There were some games that I know I should have picked differently, and I will do so in the future. But be that as it may, the totals thus far for the season, Sean 24, James 21. So you lead me by 3. This week, week 8, our pigskin picks are: the Chicago Bears travel to their division rival Detroit Lions. The Bears are 3-3, and their Lions are 3-3 as well. The Bears have the number one defense in the NFL.
Stunning.
Your pigskin pick.
Well, since this is going to be an epic battle of mass proportion for first place in the NFC North Division, wow, I'm using that sarcastically very well.
But you did it very well.
I try my best.
I like the way you handle it.
But I do see, because of that defense is really proven that they haven't gave up a rushing touchdown yet, and that's going to be a very key as far as their dominance against the Lions, because the Lions don't really know what they're going right now. They've gone ahead and benched Harrington. Garcia is not really at 100%. I am actually going to go ahead and pick the Bears on this one.
All right. You're going to go with the Bears because of their defense. The Lions' defense is not shabby. They're ranked number 8. But both teams are in the lower third, offensively speaking. So it's going to be a defensive battle. And I think the Bears have the better personnel and overall scheme. So I, too, will choose the Bears. So.
And also, I'm going to go ahead and add another thing. I actually bet that this is going to be more of White Sox-Tigers game. I think the White Sox I think the White Sox is going to score more points than the Bears will, but they're going to win. It's going to be like 5-4.
Okay. Game number 2, the Washington Redskins, also a divisional battle, travel to the Big Apple. They take on the New York Giants. The Redskins are 4-2 with their defense ranked number 7. The Giants are 4-2 with their defense ranked number 17, but their offense is ranked number 5. Your pigskin pick.
52 points last week was pretty much because they was playing a D2 college team in San Francisco. I don't see them, Washington, going to the Giants and giving out that same output. I do believe the offense of the Giants have just proven that they are very, very good. So my pick will be the Giants in this one.
Once again, we see eye to eye, and I go with the stats, with the offense being number 5. Eli Manning is appearing to come into his own. He still has a lot to learn, but I, too, think that the Giants will defeat the Washington Redskins. Game number three, the Jacksonville Jaguars, 4-2, travel to meet the St. Louis Rams, who are 3-4, and have an interim coach taking over as Mike Martz is out due to his illness. Your pigskin pick.
You know what? I believe that the Rams have been playing better with Joe Vick.
Vito.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I do believe that they are playing absolutely better right now. So I'm going ahead and take the Rams on this one. I believe that's a little of a shocker, but I'm going for the Rams on this one.
All right, in this particular instance, because the Jaguars have the number 3 defensive team in the NFL, I think they will be able to slow down the receivers of the Rams as well as their running game. Well, the Rams have not been using their running game that much lately anyway. I will go with the Jacksonville Jaguars to go in and defeat the St. Louis Rams. Game number 4, the Philadelphia Eagles travel west at 4-2 to take on the surprising 5-2 Denver Broncos. Your pigskin pick.
Wow. That is going to be a very, very good game. That probably will be one of the games of the week. Denver came off a very tough loss in New York last week. But their defense have surprised me very much, and they got a good pass defense. And the reason I mention that is, as we mentioned earlier, Philly just don't run the ball no more. It's pretty much Donovan who's going to be doing most of the running. So with that, and Donovan has not been playing very well this season.
Due to his injuries.
Well, you want to go ahead and say the injuries. I'm going to actually say what the real cause of it is. He is yet again one another person who has came victim to the Madden curse. He has not played well. He's on Madden football. It all boils together. With all this coming to mind, Denver will come out with a victory.
Well, Denver wins 75% of their games at home. Denver's defense is playing very well this season, and they have a 5-2 record. The Eagles, as you mentioned, do not exhibit any type of running game. Due to his injuries, Donovan McNabb is not able to really run the ball, and he's not really able to make the type throws that he has made in the past. I think this will be a defeat for the Eagles in Denver, mile high, so I will, too, take the Denver Broncos. And our final game is, once again, a divisional game. The Buffalo Bills travel to New England to take on the Patriots. The Bills are 3-4. The Patriots are 3-3. Your pigskin pick.
The Patriots is obviously have gotten a notch down, but they are still the champs. They know how to go ahead and win, and they win the divisional games.
Teddy Bruschi's coming back.
And I think Teddy Bruschi is going to be a big impact, not only for as far as emotional. Teddy Bruschi is a darn good linebacker, and they really did miss him this season so far. So I'm going to go ahead and go with New England. I am stunned that I'm going to say that, but New England, one of the things they do well is win the divisional games. So I'm going to go ahead and pick New England on this one.
I was surprised last week at how easily Oakland handled the Buffalo Bills. And as a result of that, with the Bills now traveling to New England to take on the Patriots, when you have an opportunity, as Bill Belichick has, to view what some other teams have done to shut you down, in addition to what he can do to shut down any NFL team, I don't see how the Bills can win this game. I think that it will be a dogfight, but the Patriots will be the ultimate winner because of Tom Brady and because of Bill Belichick. I, too, will take the New England Patriots. That's going to do it once again for this week's edition of Sport Flight.
make certain that you tune in this week as Sean and I will do a special edition of Sport Flight FYI. You will notice we did not do an NBA report, and that is because we're doing a special edition of NBA report as the NBA season begins next week, November the 1st, and we will have a preview of the upcoming NBA season. And once again, the website is urbancollegesports.com. That's urbancollegesports.com with all of your black college information, scores, rankings, conference information. Get it all at urbancollegesports.com. All right, once again, never has so few owed so much to so many. Peace. We're out of here.
Sport Flight is now approaching its final destination. Please bring all seats to an upright position. Seat belts are to remain fastened until we come to a complete stop. Thank you for flying Sport Flight magazine. We trust you have enjoyed your experience and will keep your dial locked in its current position until next week, when you once again board Sport Flight. A different sports perspective.